1059 The Region, in partnership with RE/MAX Prime Properties, present On the Market, real estate advice that works for you. Have a real estate question? Call us at 416-335-1059. Tweet us at 1059 The Region or email us at info@1059theregion.com.
This is 105.9 The Region. I'm Tina Cortez with On the Market, York Region's exclusive radio real estate show. Our expert from RE/MAX Prime Properties is Asif Khan. Good morning, Asif.
Good morning, Tina.
Now, we're heading into May. Summer is hopefully just around the corner. First, though, why don't you give us your take on the spring real estate market?
The spring real estate market, I think, was a lot better than the last couple of springs that we've seen. And there seems to be a lot more activity. There's listings that are coming out now. There is a little bit more confidence in terms of sellers wanting to put their places up and wanting to make that move after a couple of years of just staying on the sidelines.
Is this considered peak buying season?
We're getting there. Usually it would be. End of April, beginning of May, you start seeing people get out there. But I think what's happened is people have been waiting for these rate cuts. So although the rate holds have really helped with consumer confidence, I think what people are waiting for is that first shoe to fall for the rate drops. And as soon as we get that first rate drops, I think it's going to get really crazy out there.
And that rate drop is expected next month. But what are you noticing about buyer confidence?
I think the buyers are more confident now than they were before. And even, you know, when you're talking to buyers and asking them about their pre-approvals, they are not afraid to go into a variable mortgage right now because they know that the rates will go down. There's also a lot of buyers that are now starting to look at the townhome, semi-detached, the detached homes, whereas before their focus was maybe condos or some of them moving to the townhouses and things like that. But now we're starting to see the detached segment start to take off a little bit, and that's great news because that really fuels the right-sizing aspect of it. So people that are moving up or moving down, they're the ones that are going to be buying or selling these detached homes and then eventually moving into their new homes.
Are you observing multiple offer or bidding war situations?
We are, and we have been for a while. It's usually a January, February type of thing for multiple offers and bidding wars because there's not a lot of inventory. But because we haven't had a lot of inventory, even heading into the spring market, we have been seeing bidding wars and multiple offers. Now, these are not the crazy bidding wars where you were seeing in 2017 or so, where people were getting $250,000 or $200,000 over asking. You're getting maybe asking price $10,000, $20,000 over. But that's the buyers are a lot more careful right now, and they're not going into these properties that they would expect to pay a lot more, unless the property is underpriced. You're seeing a lot of realtors price properties at $799 or $999, and these are $1 million, $1.2 million properties. So you are seeing, you know, higher amounts put towards those, but you're not seeing more than market value.
Are there segments of real estate that are performing better than others, meaning is a condo or is the condo market doing better than a single detached home? What can you tell us?
So the condo market is still pretty quiet right now, and there is a lot of new construction that's just being completed. So there's a lot more on the market when you're looking at the condo market. And for that reason, I think it's a little bit quieter than it should be. But look for that to pick up, especially when the rates start to fall. Right now, the other thing that we're seeing is rents are so high that people are looking at the rent that they're paying and thinking, I could get my own mortgage for a similar payment. And we're seeing a lot of those people transition into home ownership or condo ownership because of the way the rental market is. There's a huge shortage of rental inventory as well, which is driving rental prices up. We've seen some of the highest increases in monthly rent year over year since the last 2 years. And we're going to continue to see that because there's a lot of demand for rentals.
In every sector these days, it seems like there is conversation about AI. How is AI, or is it, affecting real estate?
AI has really helped us enhance our offering. However, I know some people have said that AI will replace the human element in real estate or can replace employees. It can't do that. It can enhance it. It can make it a little more efficient. But there's with AI, it's what you're putting into the equation that you're getting out of it. So it still takes a lot of work to use AI properly in the industry. We've seen AI with automated value models before, and although it gives you a ballpark range, it can't give you an actual value of a home. That's where the human has to go in, take a look around, see what you've done, see what your neighbors have done, and then be able to feed that information into the system to come up with a proper value for your home. So AI has been around for a while in real estate, but it's never going to be a replacement for services. It's going to enhance some services and make them more efficient, but it's never going to replace it.
So what tools are you or your team using to showcase properties these days? Is it all about the open house, or has it gone beyond that?
It's gone way beyond that. And we learned a lot during the COVID period because we had to come up with new and innovative ways to showcase properties because people weren't physically able to get out there and take a look at these properties or weren't willing to get out there and take a look at their properties. Some people did not want people in their homes to take a look at their properties. So we had to come up with new ways, and a lot of those have stuck around and even been enhanced. So drone tours of the areas, tours of amenities that are surrounding the area, or even having Matterport tours where you can actually click through and walk through. It's a 360, and you can kind of even look at ceilings, flooring, everything, and also be able to change stuff. So now there's tools out there where you can go and look at a house online, see their kitchen, be able to transform that kitchen to what you want it to look like, and see how it looks on the screen as you're doing that. So there's a lot of stuff that we've been able to continue using that was implemented in the COVID period and be able to enhance those tools to make a better offering for our buyers and sellers.
What are the latest trends in real estate? What are those areas in the home that are attracting buyers?
I think the first thing you have to do is make sure you have good curb appeal, because as people are walking up to the door, you want them to feel that they're in the right home or walking up to the right home. The foyer, again, another power area. Kitchens and bathrooms is something that people always look at. They want to make sure that they're updated and they're current, or it's something that they can spend a little bit of time and money and fix up. You don't want it to be a fixer-upper or a complete gut job, because that's going to affect the value that they perceive to be for that home. The other thing is, and this is more recent, backyards and basements. People want more space for entertaining. They want more space for working from home. There's a lot of people working in the hybrid models right now. So you want there to be adequate space for them to be able to do that. And these are the areas that a lot of people are looking at over the last couple of years, and just making sure that they have all of that space available for what they want to do with their home.
If there are listeners right now who are sitting on the fence, perhaps waiting for that possible rate cut in June, what advice would you have for them?
I would say get out there now and start looking and be ready to pull the trigger, because if they're looking right now, we're in the first week of May. So if they're looking right now, it's pretty obvious that they won't be able to close before June or July. The other people have to pack up and move and get out of there. So, you're in that window now where that rate cut should take place in the next 60 days. So your mortgage will begin when you're already faced with that rate cut. So if you start shopping after the rate cut, everyone is going to be out there. So this is a good little window for buyers to get out there and purchase their home, put a 60-day or 90-day closing on it, so that when you do close, you're already part of that rate cut.
So when you say start looking, that means actually looking at properties. But what about in terms of that mortgage? What should they be doing right now to secure that possible rate?
Well, the first thing they should do is get out there and speak to a lender, a mortgage broker, or their financial institution, and get a pre-approval so then you know what you're working with in terms of dollars. And then, whenever you start shopping and you have that dollar value in front of you, it could always increase because the rate goes down. So you want to make sure that you have that number in front of you, start shopping, and then once you find the property, you're going to submit the deal to the lender again, and they're going to let you know what the current rate is going to be and how much more you qualify for if the rate did go down.
After the break, we talk property management. This is On the Market on 105.9 The Region. Stay with us.
Need to connect with Asif Khan from RE/MAX Prime Properties? Call him, 416-985-KHAN. That's 416-985-5426. Or email asif@thehomeshop.ca. Now, back to On the Market on 105.9 The Region.
Welcome back to On the Market, York Region's radio real estate show. Over to my co-host and our real estate expert, Asif Khan, from RE/MAX Prime Properties with today's guest, Asif.
Thank you, Tina. Joining us is a good friend of mine, Sharif Natu. Sharif runs CMG Toronto. It's a property management company. Sharif, welcome to On the Market.
Thanks for having me back, Asif. It's excited to be here to talk to you more about what's happening with the landlord and tenant landscape.
And Sharif, just with that, with the landlord-tenant landscape, I know there's been a lot of talk about how some tenants have taken advantage of the backlogs. Tell us a little bit about what's happening and what you're seeing, because you're hands-on, you're grassroots. What are your landlords seeing and what are you seeing in that landscape?
Yeah, so post-COVID, we started to see an 18-month backlog of hearings at the tribunal, and tenants would take advantage of not leaving the property on time. If the landlord had sold, they would stop paying rent. And so for 18 months, you'd see tenants not paying the rent to the landlord and landlord being stuck covering all these expenses, in some cases, folding their properties. So the good news now is that backlog has reduced to anywhere between 4 to 6 months, with the LTB hiring more adjudicators. So that's some good relief there for landlords. But the issues still continue, right?
So, Sharif, tell us about your role and the role of the property management company.
Yeah, so CMG Toronto started about 15, 17 years ago. The purpose of it was to support individual homeowners to buy investment real estate, and then we would manage their properties by collecting the rent, handling all the repairs and the maintenances, and the nuances such as collection, as sending notices for collections of rent and so forth. We've come a long way learning how the LTB works and the rules and responsibilities for both tenants and landlords. And I got to say that the weight sits very heavy on the landlord to absorb a lot of the losses. The tenants, you know, they want a clean property. They want somewhere that they can live peacefully. And at the same time, they face challenges from landlords as well. So sometimes it's a double-edged sword.
And a lot of people seem to think landlords have deep pockets and they own multiple properties, but some of your landlords only own one property. So any delay at the LTB or any shortfall from what they're expecting from the tenant could actually cost them their property. Have you seen a lot of stress from landlords when this happens?
100%, Asif. So, you know, what I have to say is that the relationship starts from the beginning. We manage hundreds of properties, and during COVID, post-COVID, and during these challenges, we had maybe two or three cases that went to tribunal for non-payment of rent. And it goes back to the landlords who come to us after they have had problems. The number one thing is that you have to pre-screen your tenants. You have to check their income. You have to check their credit. You have to check their pay stubs to make sure they are actually getting the income that they're posting that they're getting. And then you also want to do the reference checks. You have to take a deep dive into their credit bureaus and actually see, do these numbers make sense? Is there any fraud over here? And that's if I have to tell you, Tina, I have to tell you, this always blows my mind. We probably have a turnover of 100 plus units every single year. Can you just take a guess at how many people call us for reference checks? How many new landlords will call us for reference checks? You guys take a guess.
Under 10. I don't
20.
Know.
Yeah.
Asif, what's your number?
Yeah. I would say Asif 20.
Okay, so Tina, you win on the technicality because it's under 10, but the answer is zero.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Because the tenant tells the landlord, my landlord sucks, I have a bad relationship, They don't treat me well. And guess what? The new landlord says, well, I really want your money. Please give me your 1 month rent. My last tenant screwed me. And they don't want to pay the fees, because being a landlord for an individual owner, it's a low margin business, mm-hmm. right? And you're buying this investment property to save for your daughter, for your son, to go to school in the future, and you may cash out as a retirement. So I always tell landlords this, is that the homework is always done at the front end before you move the tenant in. There's a lot of work that's involved. There's a lot more work involved in finding a new tenant and placing them than there is in buying and selling real estate.
Sharif, you mentioned that you've been in this business for quite some time. Can you share some of the experiences or some of the difficult situations that you've had to manage?
Ooh, yeah, sure. There was a client that sold a property back in October, November. And they had a handshake agreement with the tenant that they would move out by the end of October. It was a proper 60 days notice. But then 15 days before closing, they're arranging we were arranging for the tenant to move out, and they said, well, we don't have a hearing. So they wanted to go through a whole N12 process, which is basically the landlord gives a notice that they're selling the property and they need to move, the tenants need to move out for the new buyer to come in. So these existing tenants didn't want to move out and they wanted to go through a hearing. We had to then expedite this really quickly, hire a paralegal for the owners. And by the time we got a hearing, now here's the funny part. Between October and December was a time that the cash for key settlement was being negotiated. This tenant walked away with almost $10,000 worth of value. We've heard on the news and other stories of people getting $40,000, $50,000, and tenants asking for hundreds of thousands of dollars, and these exist. But this particular owner was really unfortunately screwed in this deal, because they had to pay $10,000. The day that they settled for the tenant to get to $10,000 and to move out, the very next day they got the hearing, the notice for the hearing, which was going to take place in 2 weeks after. So this is one of these unfortunate situations. Tina, we've had situations where tenants will play the game right to the end, and then they'll run away with leaving extensive damage to the property as well.
Mm. My goodness.
And that's interesting, because we had someone that had offered a tenant $20,000 to move out. The tenant said no, they asked for more. And the landlord said, fine, then I will just wait the 6 months and see what happens at the hearing. And at the hearing, the tenant was told they had to move out because adequate notice was provided, and they ended up with nothing. So sometimes it makes more sense to take that cash for keys right away rather than wait for the hearing, because the tenant could end up getting nothing. Have you heard more of those stories?
We've heard of stories similar to that. We've heard if you don't mind, I want to share a story with you and Tina as well.
Yeah.
We had gone through during COVID, we had gone through this exact process with a tenant for a client who wanted to sell their property. Everything was done appropriately by the law. Everything was signed on and agreed. Tenants moved out. Sellers went on the market. They sold their property. 2 years later, they filed an application against the landlord, or against their landlord. They took it through tribunal. They presented their entire case from top to bottom. The seller did do nothing wrong, but the adjudicator still sided with the tenant, felt sorry for them, and awarded them, I believe it was around $6,000 or $7,000.
Wow.
So, the landlord and tenant act needs reform. And as you know, our current government has announced all these measures for affordable housing and reforming landlord and tenant laws. But I don't think they're actually speaking to landlords or individual landlords. I think the government's only speaking to large organizations like the REITs. And they're not talking to you and me, who have to earn our money to buy one property, and then from one property we go to a second and we have a bad experience and we sell both and so forth. So the mom and pop buyers is who the government needs to listen to, because they're the ones who are losing out. They're the ones who are losing out against the big landlords, who sometimes are not following the rules, right? So we need more reform with the Act.
And Therese, we could probably have this conversation for, you know, two entire shows. But before we let you go, for our landlords that are listening, tell us what the process is from when a landlord signs you up to take care of their property and what the steps are to get a tenant in there.
Okay, do you have a whole day? Okay, so...
Short version
is that number one thing is a landlord, whoever buys an investment property, needs to set expectations for themselves that owning a property, it's not a one-year get-rich-quick scheme. They have to be able to stay in the property for a minimum of 3 to 5 years to earn their return on investment. When they contact us, we ask them questions about the property, we determine the value of the rental, and we walk them through our process of how we're going to find tenants. Number one thing is when we're seeking for tenants, we want to see an application form from them. With that application form, it has to be fully filled out with their phone numbers, email addresses, all their contact information, their job letters, their pay stubs, their credit bureaus. Once we screen all those things and double check every single reference, and we actually call and want to talk to live people on the other end, we then start looking for social profiles, finding them on LinkedIn, finding them on Instagram and TikTok and so forth. It's actually really funny because I had a tenant apply for one of our rental properties and said he was a CIO, right? Basically chief something officer. CTO, chief technology officer. And claimed he was making so much money, but then when I went to find him on LinkedIn, I couldn't find him. I said, how did the CTO not show up on LinkedIn? He's like, I work for a private company. Thank you, goodbye. So it's re-screening the application, screen it. And then one thing I would recommend strongly is you're not allowed to interview the tenant before they move in. But you can call them and have a conversation about their application. And just by basic and going through their application with them, you'll know right away if this is a fit for you or not.
Get information. And if our listeners want to connect with you to find them a tenant or to lease out their property, how do they do that?
Yeah, so we can please visit our website at cmgtoronto.com. Our email address is info@cmgtoronto.com. Or they can call us at our number at 416-849-7470.
Therese, always great to talk to you, and I'm sure we'll have you back again for some real-life stories about the LTV.
Thank you, Asif. Thank you, Tina.
Terrific having you here. Thank you for joining us. When we come back, your real estate questions. This is On the Market on 105.9 The Region. Stay with us.
Need to connect with Asif Khan from RE/MAX Prime Properties? Call him, 416-985-KHAN. That's 416-985-5426. Or email asif@thehomeshop.ca. Now, back to On the Market on 105.9 The Region.
Welcome back to On the Market. Time now for our listener questions. And Ben in Vaughan wants to know if it's fair to ask his agent how long it will take to sell his home.
Certainly is. There's a lot of different, like we had talked about a few weeks ago, there's a lot that goes into days on market for your home and what to expect. It depends on the price point, depends on the area, it depends on the time of year. So your agent would be able to let you know roughly how long houses are taking to sell in the area and how long he or she thinks your house will take to sell, because they're going to know exactly how many people are looking for homes in that price range, homes that have that many number of bedrooms. If you have a 3-bedroom in an area that everyone is looking for 4 bedrooms in, it may take a little bit longer, even though you may be the best price in the area. So there's so much that goes into determining days on market. So definitely talk to your agent, ask them what's been sold similar to your home, how many days that has taken, if the price point was similar. All of these things will go into helping determine how long your house will take to sell.
In general terms, what kind of lead time is required once you determine, you know, as a person, as a family, that you're going to sell your property? How much lead time then do you need to connect with an agent and really prepare that home to sell?
I think as soon as you decide that you want to make that move or are thinking about making that move, it's time to bring in an agent to get their expertise on your home. And I don't think there you can go early enough. There's some people that we talk to that are thinking about making a move in 2 or 3 years, but we start preparing the home and start getting things ready. They also want to find out different areas that they could move to prior to making that decision and putting their house on the market. So the sooner the better.
And you're often recommending to your clients that you should buy and sell in the same market, right?
Buying and selling in the same market gives you a lot of leverage. If you're buying and maybe selling 6 months later or 4 or 5 months later, it could be a totally different market. So you may win out if the market heats up before you sell, and then you sell, you may win. But what if the market tanks and now you're getting a lot less for your house than what you paid for the other house? So buying and selling in the same market makes a lot of sense.
Now, we are expecting a rate cut from the Bank of Canada come next month. Are you seeing that there might be more people who are willing to sell their homes at this point because they think they might get more bang for their buck? And if they do sell at a higher price, where do they go?
Well, what we're seeing right now is a lot of people are treating this as a window of opportunity to purchase. So they want to buy now with a later closing date so that when the rates go down, they have more traffic to try and sell their house to. And they're anticipating that if they purchase now, they may get a better deal because the rates are higher. However, when the rates do start going down, if it's next month or the month after, they anticipate a lot of people coming off of the fence and buyers flooding the market and the market really heating up so they can get more for their house. It's a bit of a gamble, but it's a calculated risk.
Our next question comes from Wanda in Thornhill. She is planning to list her home for sale in June. What does she do now to stage and prepare her home to be on the market? How much should she invest in these pre-sale renos?
It really depends. The first thing that you have to do is just declutter. Make sure you get as much stuff out of that house as possible. You can identify stuff that you're definitely not going to be taking with you to the new place and sell it, get rid of it, trash it. But as much as you can pack up, even if you're selling in June, you're going to have all your winter clothes that will be ready to be packed and stored. Get rid of them, get them out of your closets, and then take a look at the house after it's been decluttered, because when you have a lot of furniture in there and everything, you don't see what's behind the furniture. You may need to paint the walls again. You may need to clean the floors. And a realtor would be able to come in and tell you what you need to do to match up with the Joneses in the area, making sure that if everyone has hardwood, you want hardwood. If everyone has granite counters, you don't want to have the laminate counters. So that is probably the step that you're at right now. First step, obviously, declutter, clean up, paint if you have to. June, you want to have great curb appeal to draw people in. There's a lot that you could do right now to help with that, like seeding the grass, maybe planting some flowers in the spring to get ready for that summer sale.
Is there an organization, is there a company that can help you get organized and declutter?
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of downsizing companies that are out there that could help you. The costs are, it could be prohibited to some people. So you may want to take that on yourself. But as far as renovations, that's where you want to get someone that knows what they're doing. You don't want to have DIY renos where people are going to come in and say, well, now I have to rip all of this stuff out. So when it comes to the second part of the question about how much you should spend, you really need to decide what's going to bring you the most value from your investment in those renos, because some of these investments are made where people think that's a great idea, but it's a great idea for them personally, but not for the buyers. So the buyers will look at that as a detriment. Now you've wasted all of this money. So if you're going to change your carpet to cheap laminate flooring, people are going to look at that as a detriment. But if you're going to put some nice vinyl plank or hardwood, now that's a positive. So it really depends. The realtor would be able to take a look at it and tell you exactly where and where you should not spend that money.
And if you're talking about where you should spend that money, what are the power areas as you talk about?
Kitchens and bathrooms, for sure. Mm. Kitchens and bathrooms. And then now, rec rooms, backyards, they're all coming into play because a lot of people are spending more time in their houses, right? Because they don't have that extra money to go out to movies or vacations. So you're starting to see people looking at the backyard space and saying, wow, you know, this is a great space that I can see myself hanging out in, or I can see my kids running around in. So you want to make sure that the basements and the backyards, the entertaining areas, the family hangout areas are also set up properly.
As a reminder, if you have questions for On the Market, send your email anytime to info@1059theregion.com. But Asif, if our listeners prefer to contact you directly, how can they do that?
They can. The easiest way is by text or by phone call, 416-985-5426.
If you missed any part of our show, go to 1059theregion.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Audible. I'm Tina Cortez for Asif Khan. Thank you for listening.
Need to connect with Asif Khan from RE/MAX Prime Properties? Call him, 416-985-KHAN. That's 416-985-5426. Or email asif@thehomeshop.ca.